for Wednesday, July 6th, 2022. I'm your reader, Janet Griffith. We'll start with the first page today. First article is titled, Over 750 Kids Off for Week After CR School's Cyber Breach. School District Officials Won't Comment on Scope of Attack, by Grace King. More than 750 children have a week off from summer school because of a cybersecurity breach at the Cedar Rapids Community School District. The district this week suspended its summer programming, including Kids on Course University, one of the largest summer school programs in Iowa, offering learning programs at four sites for students from all 21 Cedar Rapids elementary schools, after a cybersecurity incident was discovered over the weekend. Tracy Ehlert, third grade teacher for Kids on Course University at Hoover Community School and Democratic state legislator, said there are probably people in desperate need of alternative arrangements. It's very short notice. School officials were stationed at school bus stops Tuesday morning to let families know summer programming is canceled this week if they showed up, Ehlert said. Superintendent Noreen Bush said the cybersecurity attack is a legal matter and the district is unable to comment on it. We will communicate logistics with our community as needed, she said in a text message. District officials also did not respond to questions from the Gazette about why school programs were canceled and if district officials are working with families to find alternative childcare solutions. School officials have not described the nature of the cyber attack nor said which systems were targeted. Under an announcement of summer programs being suspended on the Cedar Rapids Community School District Facebook page, parents voiced confusion about what programs are affected by the closure. Questions included if the suspension includes Kids on Course University, Champions Child Care, Transportation to Child Care, and the Summer Lunch Program. The questions went unanswered on the district's page. The cybersecurity attack, however, is not expected to disrupt staff payroll, according to an email Monday to school staff from Deputy Superintendent Nicole Kuiker. Only staff in the district's payroll department, technology department, and accounting department are expected to report this week, according to the email obtained by the Gazette. Employees have access to their district email account from off-site locations, Kuiker said. The YMCA Day Camp program moved its programming at Taft Middle School, 5200 E Avenue Northwest, to the YMCA in Marion for the remainder of the week. Tanisha Phelps, director of child care services at the YMCA, said the decision was made by YMCA staff to continue providing working families with child care. Our biggest concern is making sure families get what they need and kids have a safe place to be, Phelps said. We will do whatever it takes to accommodate that for families who still need child care. The YMCA summer day camp is operating from 6:30 a.m. to 6 p.m. weekdays until August 12th. It was serving 40 children, 5 to 12 years old, at Taft and 60 children at the Marion YMCA, 3740 Irish Drive in Marion. The Cedar Rapids District also suspended transportation services and is unable to transport children to the YMCA day camp program on their weekly field trips, Phelps said. The district also is unable to prepare meals to be distributed through the City of Cedar Rapids Roland Recmobile, which brings activities to 13 parks in Cedar Rapids during the summer. Snacks will be available. The district is working with third-party cybersecurity experts to review the breach and take steps to ensure something similar does not happen again, according to a Monday news release. High school baseball and softball games scheduled this week are not affected by the cybersecurity breach. District officials expect regularly scheduled summer activities to resume on Monday. Firework injuries, police calls down this year. Decline seen after spike following 2017 legalization, by Michaela Ram. Although dozens were treated at Eastern Iowa hospitals over the weekend for fireworks-related injuries, this year's holiday brought fewer emergency incidents than previous years, local health care providers say. However, it's unclear what might be driving the local decline in injuries due to fireworks, such as burns or abrasions on hands or eyes. In recent years, as fireworks-related hospital visits increased, providers also have reported severe damage that resulted in amputated fingers or permanent vision loss. Unity Point Health St. Luke's Hospital in Cedar Rapids saw two fireworks-related injuries over the holiday weekend, but none were severe. By comparison, the emergency room reported five injuries at the same time last year. Mercy Medical Center, also in Cedar Rapids, reported one firework injury over the holiday, and it was not severe. Last year, the hospital also reported one injury. The University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics officials anticipated injuries would be down at their system as well, but officials still are tallying the total from the weekend, said spokeswoman Laura Shoemaker. Anecdotally, it appeared that fewer patients were arriving at UIHC's emergency department with injuries from fireworks, according to Dr. Matthew Niegard, an emergency medicine physician there. The patient volume was not like it was last year, he said. Police in Iowa City and Cedar Rapids saw different trends in fireworks-related calls about people illegally setting off fireworks. Detonating consumer fireworks inside those cities is illegal and can result in stiff fines. Iowa City saw an increase in calls of service, but over the past 2 years, Cedar Rapids saw a decline, according to police data. Iowa City Police responded to 154 fireworks-related calls for service so far in 2022, said Public Information Officer Lee Hermiston. That compares with the 111 fireworks-related police calls in 2021 and 160 in 2020. Cedar Rapids Police, however, saw a decline in the number for fireworks-related calls for service this year compared with previous years. This year, there were 553 calls for service to fireworks related to fireworks through July 4th, said Public Safety Spokesman Mike Battia. That's a decrease from both 2021 and 2020, police data shows. In 2021, there were 705 calls for service through July 4th and 795 calls for the total calendar year. There were 1,096 firework calls up until July 4th, 2020 in Cedar Rapids, and a total of 1,223 calls for service for the full calendar year. The number of citations Cedar Rapids Police issued also declined, police data shows. This year, there were 12 citations as of July 4th. By comparison, there were 18 citations for calendar 2021 and 42 citations for calendar year 2020. Two fires from Monday are currently under investigation by the Cedar Rapids Police, but Battian said it's too early to determine whether they were fireworks-related. Production from ag waste could become a big thing for farmers. Iowa businesses seek help from new USDA grant to fight climate change. By Tom Barton of the Gazette Des Moines Bureau. Like many, Zach Mann sees dollar signs in Iowa's rich black soil. Iowa's fertile farmland has been a powerhouse for producing cash crops like corn and soybeans, but at a heavy environmental cost. Recent technology has created the potential for unleashing new opportunities for his business and for farmers to grow value, markets, and revenue streams from Iowa soils, while also protecting the environment and safeguarding natural resources. Mann's Cedar Rapids Landscaping Company has partnered with a team of former Iowa State University researchers to sell a climate-friendly additive to fertilizer that some experts tout as key to soil rejuvenation and carbon sequestration. It also may help with water quality. For the last few years, Evergreen Landscape Construction and Supply in Cedar Rapids has been selling a product developed by Advanced Renewable Technology International based in Prairie City, made from biochar. The lightweight black residue is produced from burning wood chips, plant residues, manure, or other agricultural waste products. Burning the biomass in low oxygen concentrations through a process called pyrolysis creates a carbon-rich substance or charcoal. It's like a carbon sponge, said Mann, president and owner of Evergreen Landscape Construction and Supply. The biochar, he said, soaks up nutrients and serves as a habitat for many beneficial soil microorganisms that are known to promote soil and plant health. The business has been selling 5-gallon buckets of ARTI's biochar for the last 3-plus years to homeowners to improve soil quality in their vegetable gardens and raised garden beds, holding more nutrients, improving water retention, and preventing leaching. It also improves the soil's carbon storage potential. Mann now hopes to grow that side of his business in a move to become carbon neutral, thanks to a recently announced program created under the $1 trillion bipartisan infrastructure bill signed into law last year by President Joe Biden. U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack announced last week the U.S. Department of Agriculture will award up to $10 million in grants to help universities and private partners develop a supply chain roadmap to convert agricultural waste into construction materials and consumer products in an effort to fight climate change and bolster rural economies. This program will help farmers take field residues and waste products and turn them into value-added products that create wealth and drive economic development in rural areas, Vilsack said. Mann has partnered with ARTI to apply for a U.S. Department of Agriculture grant in the hopes of building a pyrolysis rector at his business using its tree trimmings and miscanthus grass used in erosion control socks it manufactures and sells for use at construction sites to create biochar. We hope to use enough biochar to accommodate the amount of CO2 we emit into the atmosphere with our trucks running down the road and our grinder, Mann said. If successful in obtaining the USDA grant, Mann said he and officials from ARTI would work to calculate how much carbon the company would need to sequester through biochar to achieve net zero carbon dioxide emissions and set a timeline. That is my end goal, Mann said. According to ARTI, 1 ton of biochar sequesters 2 tons of carbon dioxide. ARTI specializes in biochar production and sales and also develops, designs, and manufactures modular pyrolysis systems for the production of biochar from waste biomass. Bernardo Del Campo, the company's president, said it is working toward a future in which the technology becomes standard practice. Del Campo heralded Vilsack's announcement of the grant program. We need public entities to lead the way and show where we go and showing the vision, Del Campo said. And then the private industry, when the path is done, they will jump in and run. Based on this, we're going to see all sorts of business opportunities develop that before were just talks. ARTI has also partnered with former Evergreen owner Dale Peterson to pilot a biochar-based filter to remove nitrates from his one-acre pond in Toddville. Peterson sold Evergreen to Mann, a former longtime employee, in January and started a new landscape nursery business, Green Lincoln Associates, with Evergreen Landscape Construction and Supply serving as its parent company. Peterson said he has raised thousands and thousands of catfish in the pond over the last 15 years, but over time, nutrient load has caused algae to build up, creating a certain amount of toxicity that causes it not to be a productive pond. Should the water filtration project prove successful, Peterson said he intends to expand into aquaculture. Mann predicts that by 2027, biochar will be a big thing. It holds the nutrients in the ground rather than releasing the nutrients, limiting runoff, Mann said. Over time, the idea is you don't have to use as much fertilizer. Moving on to local and regional news inside the paper. First one, headline reads, a request to rehear abortion case rejected. Reynolds made request to Iowa justices. District judge will be asked to rule on what legal standards should apply. By Aaron Murphy. New legal standards for potential abortion restrictions in Iowa must be argued first in front of a lower court judge. The Iowa Supreme Court ruled Tuesday in rejecting a request from the governor. The court denied Governor Kim Reynolds' request to rehear a case involving state law that requires a 24-hour waiting period before a woman can have an abortion. Reynolds had requested the high court rehear it so that justices could rule on what legal standard would be applied to future abortion regulations in the state. The Iowa Supreme Court ruling is the latest legal domino to fall in the wake of rulings by the U.S. Supreme Court, which eliminated a woman's access to abortion as a federal right and sent the issue to states, and by the Iowa Supreme Court reversing its earlier decision that the state constitution provided a fundamental right to an abortion. With their law-riding majorities in state government, Iowa Republicans are expected to further restrict, if not outright ban, abortions in Iowa. In Tuesday's decision, justices rejected Reynolds' request, insisting the case first return to the district court level, where the parties will argue before a district judge. That district court judge's ruling is likely to be appealed, and the case likely will return to the Iowa Supreme Court anyway, said legal expert Sally Frank, a law professor at Drake University. Frank said the courts eventually will be asked to rule what type of legal standards should be applied to future abortion regulations, rational basis or undue burden. Frank said what kind of abortion restriction or ban State House Republicans propose likely will depend on which standard the state courts apply. In the meantime, abortion remains legal in Iowa up until 20 weeks of pregnancy, as has been the case since 2017. However, the state law that requires a woman to wait 24 hours before having an abortion likely will go into effect soon. Reynolds' office did not immediately respond to a request for comment. Reynolds also, in the wake of the recent U.S. and Iowa Supreme Court rulings, has asked the state courts to lift an injunction on a state law that would ban all abortions after 6 weeks of pregnancy, which often is before the woman knows she is pregnant. The courts have not yet ruled on that request. Proposed CO2 pipeline would cross Lynn, Johnson. Wolf Carbon Solutions has deal to transport CO2 from ADM plants. By Aaron Jordan. Residents of Lynn, Johnson, Cedar, Clinton, and Scott counties will have a chance in September to share their thoughts about another proposed CO2 pipeline, this one connecting ADM ethanol plants. ADM and Wolf Carbon Solutions announced in January the signing of a letter of intent to build a 350-mile pipeline to transport liquefied CO2 from ADM's ethanol and cogeneration facilities in Cedar Rapids and Clinton to ADM's already operational sequestration site in Decatur, Illinois. Wolf filed its first documents with the Iowa Utilities Board on June 27th, submitting a letter asking for 6 information meetings and providing a map of the proposed route, which starts in Cedar Rapids and goes southeast through Cedar and Scott counties. A north-south branch extends from Clinton to the main line, according to the map. The primary proposed route would just barely enter Johnson County on the north. This is the third CO2 pipeline proposed for Iowa. Navigator, a Texas company, wants to build a 1,300-mile pipeline that would pass through 35 Iowa counties, including Bremer, Fayette, Buchanan, and Delaware, capturing carbon dioxide at ethanol and fertilizer plants. The gas would be put under pressure, turned into liquid, and piped to a site in south-central Illinois near the ADM site. Navigator initially planned for its pipeline to go through Linn County, but once ADM decided to go with Wolf, Navigator dropped this part of the route. Summit Carbon Solutions is planning a 2,000-mile CO2 pipeline through Iowa to North Dakota. The company announced in December it has started drilling test wells in 3 places in the Williston Basin in North Dakota. Wolf, based in Alberta, Canada, says its project would be capable of transporting 12 million tons of CO2 per year, which includes CO2 from the ADM plants, as well as spare capacity to serve other third-party customers looking to decarbonize across the Midwest and Ohio River Valley, Wolf said in January. At ADM's Decatur site, the company has stored more than 3.5 million metric tons of CO2 a mile and a half under the surface, the company reported. Carbon sequestration is a relatively new idea that involves injecting liquid CO2 into rock formations underground. The technology is intended to reduce greenhouse gases that can cause climate change. The Iowa Utilities Board would have to approve any pipeline projects, including the potential step of using eminent domain to force the sale of easements to the companies. Once informational meetings are held, Wolf may begin reaching out to landowners along the proposed route and attempting to negotiate easements. Hundreds of Iowa landowners, county boards of supervisors, and environmental groups have opposed use of eminent domain. The Linn County Board of Supervisors voted unanimously in January against forced easements for CO2 pipelines. Critics are concerned about the safety of the pipelines and do not think private companies should get federal tax credits for what they consider unproven technology. And here's some political news. Dem senator draws more GOP support. Kenny faces incumbent Republican in new Senate district. From the Gazette Des Moines Bureau. Oxford Democrat Kevin Kenny picked up another endorsement from the other side of the political aisle in his reelection campaign for Iowa Senate District 46. Kenny's campaign announced Tuesday the endorsement of one-time Republican challenger Michael Moore, whom Kenny defeated in a race for an Iowa Senate District 39 seat in 2014. Moore, former CEO of United Presbyterian Home, a retirement community in Washington, Iowa, said he considers himself more of a centrist but is a registered Republican. Kenny's campaign also announced the endorsement of Moore's wife, Elaine, who is a member of the Washington City Council. He looks at every side of an issue, talks to anyone who wants to talk, and plays it down the middle, Moore said of Kenny in a statement. That's a truly rare quality in a public official these days, and we believe we need more of that in our politics. We're proud to stand behind Kevin, and we ask our fellow Republicans to join us in supporting Senator Kevin Kenny this November. It's the second Republican endorsement Kenny has picked up for re-election campaign in 2 weeks. Retiring Republican state lawmaker Jared Klein of Keota endorsed Kenny's re-election over that of Republican Senator Don Driscoll of Williamsburg. Kenny has served in the Iowa legislature since 2015 and currently represents Senate District 39. Due to redistricting, he is running for re-election in Senate District 46, which includes rural Johnson County as well as Iowa and Washington counties. Officer dies from medical emergency after child shooting. Mayor, Coralville reeling after deaths of 3-year-old and police officer. By Emily Anderson. A Coralville police officer, one of those responding to a call about a 3-year-old being shot Sunday, later died from an acute medical emergency, according to a Facebook post from the Coralville Police Department. We are reeling from both of these incidents, Coralville Mayor Megan Foster said in an interview Tuesday. The loss of this young child in our community and the loss of this officer who served for over 2 decades and was known for his kindness. Damari Sanders, a 3-year-old boy, was critically injured Sunday in Coralville after suffering a gunshot wound. The child died later that evening at the hospital. Coralville Police and the Iowa Division of Criminal Investigation are investigating the shooting and have provided no public explanation of the circumstances leading up to it. Johnson County Supervisor Roy San Porter, a friend of the boy's family, said his family is distraught. Porter was working on a GoFundMe page online to help the family with funeral expenses and other financial struggles. While funeral arrangements are underway, we as a community must step up to show full support to this mom in her time of need. The day she lost her son, a piece of her heart was lost too, Porter wrote on the page. Sergeant John Williams, who had been with the Coralville Police Department for over 28 years, died from a medical emergency in the aftermath of responding to the shooting, according to the Facebook post. But his death was not directly related to Damari's death, according to Coralville City Administrator Kelly Hayworth. His knowledge, experience, and leadership will be near impossible to replace. Our thoughts and prayers are with his family, friends, co-workers, and all those he helped throughout his career, the post reads. Iowa City Police respond to assault at GuideLink Center. Individual assaulted staff members left backpack at the scene. By Isabella Zaluska. Law enforcement responded to an incident at GuideLink Center in Iowa City, in which a person physically assaulted staff members after walking into the building. The incident at 300 Southgate Avenue happened around 10:24 a.m. Tuesday, according to the calls for service. The call type is listed as DIST fight in progress. The Iowa City Police Department and Johnson County Sheriff's Office responded. When officers arrived, the person involved in the assault began to attack them, according to a news release from the sheriff's office. The individual was detained by officers. The news release said the person accused in the attack left a backpack at the GuideLink Center. The Johnson County Metro Bomb Team removed the suspicious package and the scene has been determined to be safe. More information about the active investigation will be released as it becomes available, the news release said. The GuideLink Center was to remain closed until 6 a.m. today, according to the news release. The center provides mental health and substance abuse care for adults. The center is typically open 24/7 and provides sobering crisis stabilization, crisis observation, and detox services. People can walk in to access services or be referred by a health care provider or law enforcement. Former landlord in CR acquitted of assaulting his tenant with hammer. Landlord told jury he was attacked by tenant and was defending himself. By Trish Mahaffey. A former Cedar Rapids landlord was acquitted Friday of assaulting a tenant with a hammer after the tenant kicked in a basement door and attacked the landlord. Jeffrey Martin, 44, charged with willful injury causing serious injury, testified during trial last week that he was defending himself, April 17, 2019, against his former tenant, Kevin Keith, who had received an eviction notice a day before. Martin, now of Boston, would have faced a 10-year sentence if convicted. According to a criminal complaint, Keith told police that Martin attacked him with a hammer, striking him three times in the head on April 17, 2019. Keith suffered a skull fracture as a result of the assault. Michael Hammer, Martin's lawyer, said Keith, who lived on the second floor, kicked in the basement door twice that day. The first time Keith called police, he said Martin turned off the power and he was going into the basement to turn it on. But Martin told officers he never shut off the electricity. Nobody was arrested, and officers told the landlord to turn on the electricity. Martin told police that Keith reported it to cause problems because he was being evicted. LaHammer said Martin later on April 17th repaired the basement door. Keith kicked it down again and then went up the stairs into Martin's kitchen on the main floor and assaulted him, LaHammer said. Martin testified that he defended himself with a hammer. The court hearing to evict Keith for not paying his rent occurred April 16th, and he was told to be out of the apartment April 19th, according to court documents. Following 4 days of testimony, a Linn County jury started deliberations at 4:30 p.m. Friday and came back with an acquittal for Martin at 5:45 p.m., LaHammer said. Field of Dreams TV project loses home base, not $6 million. State award remains attached to show, which is shopping new broadcast partner, by Aaron Murphy. The $6 million in taxpayer funding awarded to a Field of Dreams TV series will remain dedicated to the project, despite a recent report that the show is currently without a broadcast home, Governor Kim Reynolds' office said Tuesday. The entertainment publication Variety recently reported that the series, which would be based on the iconic 1989 movie that was largely filmed in Iowa, no longer will be streamed on Peacock, a channel owned and operated by NBC Universal. The project is shopping for a new broadcast partner, Variety reported. The state of Iowa awarded $6 million in funding to the project via the state's Destination Iowa program, which is run by the State Economic Development Department and is designed to attract visitors and new residents to the state. Destination Iowa was funded by $100 million in federal pandemic relief funding. While the $6 million had not yet been appropriated to the Field of Dreams TV project, that funding will remain dedicated to the project until it begins operating, the governor's office confirmed. As of June 27th, the state had awarded $16.5 million in Destination Iowa funding to four projects: $6 million to the Field of Dreams TV series, $7 million to the Siouxland Regional Trail System, $2.5 million to Polk County's Easter Lake North Shore project, $1 million to a project connecting trails in central Iowa. According to the Hollywood Reporter, the Field of Dreams series is planned as an adaptation of the movie, which featured a makeshift baseball field that was carved into an Iowa cornfield. The field used in the film is just outside Dyersville and has since become a popular tourist destination. The new series would again film in Iowa, but not at the movie site in Dyersville. Filming was expected to take place throughout the state, including in Polk, Mahaska, Clinton, and Boone counties, according to the Hollywood Reporter. The new series is helmed by Michael Schur, whose TV credits include The Office, Parks and Recreation, and The Good Place. National Science Foundation grant goes to company based in CR. Funding will measure effectiveness of risk assessment tool developed by Presage, by Michaela Ram. The National Science Foundation has awarded a Cedar Rapids-based company a $256,000 grant to test out its digital tool that aims to reduce risks in healthcare. Presage, Inc. is a healthcare risk assessment and mitigation company founded by Dr. James Levitt, a retired cardiothoracic surgeon, and Travis Matheson, a local software engineer. The company recently received the National Science Foundation Small Business Innovation Research Grant totaling $256,000. With this funding, Levitt and Matheson will study the effectiveness of the methodology they've created for their risk assessment digital tool. Over the next 6 months, they will measure the risk factors of patients receiving coronary artery bypass surgery at Unity Point St. Luke's Hospital. "We think we have a concept that's worth something," said Levitt, the CEO of Presage. The company has developed a digital tool that uses artificial intelligence to identify steps throughout the healthcare process from check-in to the recovery room, to identify the greatest risks to patients based on the specific procedure and their underlying health conditions. "It also accounts for factors like staff fatigue or outdated clinical equipment," Levitt said. For example, the risk for complications for an average, otherwise healthy patient receiving a coronary bypass surgery is about 1% to 2%. But if the patient has diabetes, is overweight and hypertensive, and previously had heart surgery, the risk of complications rises to about 5% to 8%, Levitt said. The system would flag these risks on the electronic medical record system, serving as a reminder for healthcare providers where the greatest risk lies with each patient. "Doctors and nurses are busy, and they're doing the best they can," Levitt said. "We're not trying to tell them what to do. We're just flagging the critical areas for that particular patient. By flagging these risks, the goal is to reduce medical errors and improve patient outcomes following medical and surgical procedures." The idea for the tool comes from Levitt's 40-year career completing cardiac and thoracic surgical procedures. "I was always doing surgeries that had risks, so I was always thinking about risk," Levitt said. "I would walk into an operating room on a regular basis wondering, am I sure I'm thinking about everything I need to think about for this patient? Is everything front of mind that should be?" Levitt and Matheson completed the Iowa Startup Accelerator program at NewBoCo last year before applying for the National Science Foundation. Once they successfully complete this phase of their research, they plan to apply for a second grant to further develop the software. And now a few short items from the Eastern Iowa Briefs section. Fill the Shells for Veterans on July 16th. The Freedom Foundation, which supports veterans in civilian life, needs help. As summer arrives, donations to the organization's pantry are down, so it is hoping that the community will step up and help fill the shelves for veterans in need. From 8 a.m. to noon, July 16th, people are encouraged to stop by the Freedom Foundation, 609 Centerpoint Road Northeast, and drop off items to fill the shelves. The group is seeking non-perishable, no expired food, men's and women's toiletries, and basic household items: Kleenex, toilet paper, dish soap, laundry detergent, hand soap, and disinfecting wipes. For more information, contact 319-826-2010 or Lexi Coberly at usfreedomfoundation.org. You are listening to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Wednesday, July 6, 2022, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. Anthony Tony Paul Valick of Cedar Rapids regained his freedom and entered the gates of heaven on July 4, 2022. Visitation will be held from 4 to 6 p.m. on Friday, July 8, 2022, at St. Ludmilla Catholic Church in Cedar Rapids. Funeral Mass will be held at 10 a.m. on Saturday, July 9, 2022, at St. Wenceslas Church in Spillville, Iowa. Father Kenneth J. Laser will officiate. Burial will be held in the church cemetery. Murdoch Linwood Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Cedar Rapids is assisting the family. He was preceded in death by his parents, Robert and Helen Balick, wife Jane, and brother Jerry Balick. In lieu of flowers, donations can be made to the Kiwanis Clubs of Marshalltown or Hiawatha, or Friends of the Library for the blind and physically handicapped. To see full obituary or share a memory, go to murdochfuneralhome.com under obituaries. John K. Williams, police sergeant with the Coralville Police Department for 28 years, passed away July 3, 2022. He was 59 years old. A funeral service for John will be held on Monday, July 11, 10 a.m. at Grace Community Church, 2707 Dubuque Street Northeast, North Liberty, 52317. A visitation will be held on Sunday, July 10, from 4 to 7 p.m., also at Grace Community Church. John was born April 25, 1963, in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, the son of Gary and Sandra Lauger Williams. John was raised in Mount Pleasant, Iowa, and graduated from Mount Pleasant High School in 1981. John was a man of integrity, precision, and love. He cared deeply for his community and loved his family endlessly. His wife, Kim, was his greatest ally, and his children and grandchildren were his foundation. The grief we feel for John is immense, but his memory and legacy will be carried on through all who love him. Memorial contributions in John's memory are suggested to Project Canine Hero. Memories and condolences can be expressed at gayandchia.com. Charlotte Char Louise Manley Blodgett, 81, of Burlington, died Saturday, July 2, 2022, at the Wapello Specialty Care Center in Wapello. Born October 16, 1940, in Fairfield, Iowa, she was the daughter of Dale and Margaret Lyons Edwards. Char attended Fairfield High School. She was the former state vice president of Iowa JCETs and past president of Fort Madison JCETs. She organized boxes for boys for active military serving in Vietnam, was former Welcome Wagon volunteer, and was the Iowa State volunteer for the Family Assistance Program for the Iowa National Guard. Char served as the executive director for the Burlington Homeless Shelter and was director of the Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault Center in Burlington for 11 years. She was active in family programs for the Iowa National Guard in Des Moines at Camp Dodge, and was instrumental in starting the Engineer Ball for the Iowa National Guard in Burlington. She was a member of Messiah Lutheran Church, Heritage Trust, former member of the U.S. Bank Board of Directors, Eagles Airy No. 150, and Burlington Kiwanis. Char loved her children and adored her grandchildren. They brought her much joy in life all the way to the end. The funeral service for Char will be 11 a.m. Friday, July 8th at Lunning Chapel. Interment will be in Aspen Grove Cemetery. The family will receive friends from 9 a.m. until the time of service on Friday. A memorial fund has been established in her memory. Online condolences may be made by visiting LunningFuneralChapel.com. Cindy K. Bascom, 59, of Cedar Rapids, Iowa, passed away suddenly on Monday, July 4, 2022, in her home from a recent cancer diagnosis. A celebration of life will be held at a later date. Arrangements are with Stuart Baxter Funeral and Memorial Services, Cedar Rapids. Cindy was born on June 21, 1963, in Cedar Rapids, the daughter of Richard and Kay Thompson Bascom. She graduated from Metro High School in 1982. Cindy enjoyed bingo, going to the casino, and concerts. She worked at the Johnson Avenue Dairy Queen for many years and loved her work family, customers, and vendors. Cindy had a lot of love for her large family. She was preceded in death by her mother, Kay Thompson, grandparents, and her former partner, Dan Brown. Memorials may be directed to the funeral home. Please share your support and memories with Cindy's family on her tribute wall at stuartbaxter.com under obituaries. Gina Marie Rizzio, 30, of Cedar Rapids, was called home to the Lord on Sunday, July 3, 2022, after a courageous battle with ovarian cancer. Services 6 p.m. Thursday at Tien Funeral Home by Pastor Debbie Eberle from Spirit of Faith Church. Friends may visit with the family on Thursday from 2 to 6 p.m. Gina was born on August 14, 1991 in Cedar Rapids, the daughter of Rick and Tammy Rizzio. She graduated from Jefferson High School and later went to cosmetology school. Gina was a CMA at the Veterans Home in Marshalltown and also worked at her church daycare. She was a member of the Spirit of Faith Church. Gina was passionate about many things. She was the queen of thrift store shopping, an avid fisherman, a masterful chef and foodie. Her faith was very important and she was very active in her church. Above all, Gina loved spending time with her family, especially her daughters, and will be deeply missed. Instead of flowers, memorials may be directed to Gina's family. Online condolences can be left at tnfuneralhome.com. Mitchell Allen Sedell of Marion released his earthly pains and went to be with the Lord on July 3, 2022, after a sudden and short battle with cancer. Visitation will be held from 2 to 5 p.m. on Sunday, July 10, 2022, at Murdoch Funeral Home and Cremation Service of Central City. Funeral service will begin at 10:30 a.m. on Monday, July 11, 2022, at United Parish in Coggin, Iowa, with burial to follow at Coggin Cemetery. The family asks that any monetary gifts be made to the Iowa Donor Network in honor of Mitch. Mitch was born on January 10, 1959, to Gary and Ann Kirby Sedell in Manchester, Iowa. Mitch spent his youth tending the family farm, and upon his graduation from Maquoketa Valley High School in 1977, continued work with his family at Buffalo Bay Grain, later becoming an over-the-road truck driver. Mitch met his wife, Charlene Schatzley, in October of 1979, and the two were married on August 23, 1980, at the United Parish Church in Coggin, where they continued as lifelong members. They enjoyed traveling and had many adventures throughout their 42 years of marriage. While living in Coggin, Mitch served the community as a volunteer fireman and a member of the Lions Club. He served as both chief of the fire department and president of the Lions Club during his years of service. On April 24, 1996, Mitch received a second chance at life via a life-saving kidney transplant. The selfless gift from a woman in New York allowed Mitch to enjoy an unprecedented 26 years of life as an organ transplant recipient. As listed donors themselves, Mitch's wife and children encourage all to consider becoming organ donors. One of his greatest joys in life was seeing the country through his travels as an over-the-road truck driver. Mitch traveled thousands of miles across the United States and Canada, delivering a wide variety of food product ingredients. Mitch's hope prior to starting chemotherapy was to be able to return to the road and wear out his new truck prior to retirement. Darlene Martha Wadey Lovell, 86, of Marion, Iowa, passed away peacefully on Monday, July 4, 2022. Fry Funeral Home will host all services, a visitation on Thursday, July 7, 2022, from 4 to 7 p.m., and a funeral service officiated by the Reverend Jamie Rising at 10 a.m. on Friday, July 8, 2022. Darlene will be laid to rest in the Woodbridge Cemetery, Buchanan, Iowa. Online condolences may be shared at fryfuneralhome.com. Darlene was born on Tuesday, February 18, 1936, in Cedar County, Iowa, to Christian and Adeline Peckenschneider Wadey. Growing up in Tipton, Iowa, she met Glenn Lovell Sr., and they married in 1952. They had five children, Linda, Debbie, Glenn Jr., Terry, and Randy, and later divorced. Darlene moved to Marion, where she lived the rest of her life. She worked at Townhouse Motel, Amana Refrigeration, Collins Plaza, and Mercy Hospital. She had a full life visiting all 50 states and going on three cruises. She also loved bingo and going to the casino. Darlene lived in a senior independent living complex for the last 13 years, meeting many new friends, playing bingo, and doing many activities with these friends. Her family was very important to her. She was the person that would do anything for you. She will be missed greatly by her family and many friends. Memorials may be addressed to Linda Lovell, 1220 44th Street, Marion, Iowa, 52302. Gary Joseph Stover, 85, of Iowa City, passed away on Saturday, July 2, 2022, at the Bird House Hospice Home of Johnson County. A memorial mass will be held at St. Wenceslaus Catholic Church, Iowa City, on Tuesday, July 12, 2022, at 10:30 a.m., with Father Gary Beckman officiating. Burial will follow at St. Joseph Cemetery, Iowa City. Friends may visit the family on Monday, July 11th from 4 to 6 p.m. at Lensing Funeral Home and Cremation Service, Iowa City. Memorials may be directed to the Birdhouse Hospice Home of Johnson County. Gary was born on July 8, 1936, in Ottumwa, Iowa, the son of Ira and Florence Weed Stover. Twin sisters Joan Schnabelin and Geraldine Nesbitt, deceased, welcomed their brother. He was a graduate of Iowa City High School, class of 1954, and served in the Iowa National Guard. Gary began working for Northwest Bell, retiring after 44 years of service with CWA Chapter 70901. On August 8, 1959, Gary married Judy Krobe at St. Mary's in Solon. They had three children, Brian, Sean, and Mara. On April 10, 2008, Gary and Judy lost their beloved daughter, Mara. Gary and Mara both succumbed to cancer. Gary was a member of St. Wenceslaus Catholic Church, Iowa City. He was a member of the Telephone Pioneers and Communications Workers of America. Things Gary enjoyed most was his role as husband, father, grandfather, and great-grandfather, the love he shared with wife and family. Laura Lynn Zeman, 58, of Lewanna, Iowa, died Thursday, June 30, 2022, at Gunderson Lutheran Medical Center, La Crosse, Wisconsin, following a short but courageous battle with cancer. Laura Lynn was born December 11, 1963, to Darwin and Rebecca Pollock Fritz in Sumner, Iowa, was baptized at St. John Lutheran in Sumner on January 26, 1964. Darwin and Rebecca then made their home in Postville, Iowa, where Laura was confirmed May 6, 1979, at St. Paul Lutheran Church and graduated from Postville High School in 1982. After graduating from high school, Laura attended Capri Cosmetology School in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. She returned to Postville and worked as a cosmetologist at the Beauty Hut in Postville. Here she and her clients enjoyed sharing stories and plenty of laughs. On July 14, 1984, Laura was married to James Martin Zeman at St. Paul Lutheran Church in Postville, Iowa. Jim and Laura were blessed with two sons, Ryan and Nick Zeman. Laura loved watching her sons play sports at Postville. Eventually, Laura left the cosmetology field but continued to serve her community by taking on the manager role at Club 51 in Postville. People often commented on what a good burger and potato salad she served up at 51. Laura served on the Northeast Iowa Recreation Center Board, formerly known as the YMCA. She and Jim were integral in the center being a great addition to the community and rarely missed a day of working out. One of Laura's favorite things to do was bowl with her teammates and spend a week at the state tournament. A visitation was held from 4 to 7 p.m. on Monday, July 4, 2022 at St. Paul Lutheran Church in Postville, Iowa. From 9:30 to 10:30 a.m., there was a one-hour visitation prior to the service at the church on Tuesday. Funeral service was at 11 a.m. on Tuesday, July 5th, at St. Paul Lutheran Church in Postville with Reverend Lynn Noel and Daryl Schultz as officiants. Shuddy Grau Funeral Home and Cremation Service Postville is helping the family with arrangements. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to Northeast Iowa Wellness Center and Tri-City Golf Course. Joel S. Keim, 52, of Marengo, passed away Sunday, July 3, 2022, at the University of Iowa Hospital, Iowa City. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. Thursday, July 7, 2022, at the First Presbyterian Church, Marengo, with Reverend Annie Thorne officiating. Visitation will be from 4 to 8 p.m. Wednesday, July 6, 2022, at Closter Funeral Home, Marengo. In lieu of flowers, a memorial fund has been established. Interment will be in the Marengo Cemetery at a later date. Catherine Margaret Kathy Duncan, 82, of Vinton, passed away peacefully on Monday, July 4, 2022, at the Virginia Gay Annex, with her family by her side. Funeral services will be held at 1 p.m. Friday, July 8, 2022, at Wesley United Methodist Church in Vinton, with Reverend Brian Channel officiating. Visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. Thursday at the Phillips Funeral Home Chapel, 212 East 6th Street in Vinton. Private family interment will be held at Evergreen Cemetery in Red Oak, Iowa, on Saturday. A memorial fund has been established. Deanne Catherine Supple, 83, of Manchester, Iowa, passed away on Monday, July 4, 2022, at Edgewood Convalescent Home in Edgewood, Iowa. Visitation for Deanne will be held Saturday, July 9, 2022, from 9:30 a.m. to 11 a.m. at St. Mary Catholic Church in Manchester. Mass of Christian Burial will follow at 11 a.m. at the church, with Reverend Gabriel Anderson officiating. Burial will follow at Calvary Cemetery, Ryan, Iowa. Bonenkamp Murdoch Funeral Home and Cremation Service Manchester is in charge of arrangements. Linda Lee Dalbenberger Stark, 84, of Center Point, Iowa, and most recently of Emery Place in Robbins, Iowa, passed away peacefully on Monday, July 4, 2022, surrounded by her loving family. Visitation will be held from 10 to 11:30 a.m. on Friday, July 8, 2022, at Center Point United Methodist Church in Center Point. A funeral service will follow at 11:30 a.m. on Friday at the church with Pastor Andrew Happ officiating. Burial, Center Point Cemetery, Center Point. Murdoch Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Center Point is assisting the family. Linda was born on January 9, 1938 in Quasqueton, Iowa, to Arlie and Vida Chesmore Daubenberger. On August 2, 1957, she was united in marriage to Alfred Duane Stark at Quasqueton Union Church. Memorials may be directed to the family. For the full obituary and to share a memory of Linda, please visit murdochfuneralhome.com. Susan Nancy LeMay, 72, of Cedar Rapids, Iowa, died Wednesday, June 22, 2022, at Mercy Medical Center in Cedar Rapids. Celebration of life, 2 to 4 p.m. Saturday, July 9th, at the Legacy Center at Murdoch-Lindwood, 520 Wilson Avenue Southwest, Cedar Rapids. Suzanne was born on October 13, 1949, in Mount Holly, New Jersey, the daughter of Augustine and Lucinda Adams Malika. She loved to crochet, do puzzles, and spend time with her grandson, Aramis. Suzanne will be missed. Please share a memory of Suzanne at murdochfuneralhome.com under obituaries. Jack A. Perkins, 93, of Iowa City, passed away peacefully on Saturday, July 2, 2022, at Mercy Hospital, Iowa City, after a brief illness. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. Monday, July 11, 2022, at Lensing Funeral and Cremation Service, Iowa City. Immediately following the service, lunch will be served at the Kirkwood Room at Governor's Ridge, 515 Kirkwood Avenue, Iowa City. Burial at Memory Gardens will follow the luncheon. Visitation will be from 10 to 11 a.m. at the funeral home prior to the service. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be directed to Briarwood Healthcare Center, Iowa City, or First Presbyterian Church, Iowa City. Jack was born on January 7, 1929, in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. He was raised in Des Moines, Iowa, the son of Adelbert and Anna Browen Perkins. While attending East High School, he enjoyed playing the trumpet and playing sports such as golf, football, and softball. Jack also began working at Barbara's Bake Shop, learning the tricks of the trade. After high school, he attended Grandview College, Des Moines, for 2 years. During this time, he met Ruth Anderson. They were married in Nevada, Iowa, on October 8, 1950. From 1951 to 53, Jack served in the U.S. Army. Upon discharge, they moved to Iowa City, where they owned and operated Barbara's Bake Shop, from 1953 to 1986. Jack was a longtime member of First Presbyterian Church in Iowa City, a past president of the Iowa Bakers Association, a Rotary Club member, and member of the Elks Club BPOE. He had a positive outlook on life, was very sociable, and enjoyed making people smile or laugh. In his free time, his favorite activities were golfing, fishing, and flying the airplane he co-owned. Lee Alexandra Schilling of Colorado Springs, Colorado. The special gathering in remembrance of Lee has been rescheduled for noon to 2 p.m. July 10, 2022, at the home of Lee's father, Everett Schilling, in rural Alburnett. Come and share your memories of her while enjoying a light lunch. Neil Leslie Boudreau, 55, of Marion, passed peacefully away Friday, July 1, 2022, at University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics in Iowa City, Iowa, surrounded by his family and soulmate. He was born in Lafayette, Louisiana, on October 18, 1966. He graduated from Vermilion Catholic High School in Abbeville, Louisiana, then attended the University of Louisiana at Lafayette. He found his life passion obtaining his cosmetology license and found accomplishment in developing a successful salon business in Louisiana. In 1997, Neil relocated to Iowa, where he continued growing his career by opening Neil Boudreau Salon. He cherished the relationships fostered by owning his own business. Neil enjoyed the friendships he made through serving the community. He was compassionate to their needs and volunteered on multiple organizations' boards. He had a special fondness for Cedar Rapids, Shop with a Cop, Meals on Wheels, and extended himself to so many other organizations throughout the metropolitan area. Neil was a lifelong ambassador of Louisiana here in Iowa and made sure everyone experienced that authentic Cajun cooking. Neil was grateful for how much time he was able to spend with his family over the last few years. A visitation will be held at Cedar Memorial Chapel Stateroom on Monday, July 11, 2022, from 4 to 7 p.m. A funeral service will be held at the Cedar Memorial Park Chapel of Memories on Tuesday, July 12, 2022 at 11 a.m. with certified celebrant Randy Walton officiating. Robert E. Dye, 73, of Marion, passed away on Monday, May 30, 2022, following a long illness at Silver Oaks Nursing Home in Marion. In agreement with his wishes, cremation has taken place. A celebration of Robert's life will be held from 2 to 4 p.m. Saturday, July 9th at Murdoch Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Marion. Please share a memory of Robert at murdochfuneralhome.com. Dorothy Mae Reeder Schulte, 89, of Norway, Iowa, died on June 28, 2022, after a short stay at Oldorf Hospice House of Mercy. Dorothy, the daughter of Frank and Rose McCormick Reeder, was born on September 30, 1932, and grew up on a farm north of Watkins with her three siblings, Russell, Dolores, and John. She is a 1950 graduate of Newhall High School and very much enjoyed attending her high school reunions over the years. She married Albert J. Schulte on August 12, 1954. Together, they bought their first farm in the Walford area. In 1966, they moved to Albert's family homestead when his parents retired to town. They raised five children in the Norway schools. Dorothy spent most of her life as an active member of St. Michael's Church in Norway, and her faith was a cornerstone of her life. She also was a member of the American Legion Auxiliary and the Catholic Order of Foresters Society. Most of her life, she was busy as a mother and wife on the farm, but later, as the children moved on, she went back to college for clerical services and worked for some years at the Axioch Inn in Amana. In her spare time, she loved to read, enjoyed polka music, and gardening. Dorothy and Albert enjoyed going dancing with family and friends and taking their Sunday drives. Together, they retired to Prairie Rose in Norway in 1998. Please join her family to celebrate her life at a viewing from 4 to 7 p.m. Friday, July 8th at St. Michael's Catholic Church Parish Hall. Mass of Christian burial, 10:30 a.m. Saturday, July 9th at St. Michael's Catholic Church, Norway, Iowa, with Father Craig Stiemel officiating. Burial will be at St. Michael's Cemetery, Norway. Donations may be made in her name to the Norway Fire Department. Online condolences may be sent to the family at newhousefuneralservice.com. Brosh Funeral Service of Norway is assisting Dorothy's family. That concludes today's obituaries. We'll spend our last few minutes on the editorial page. There's one letter to the editor today. It is from William Green of North Liberty. The headline is Overcome Bias to Understand Seriousness of January 6th. Two scenarios. One, a woman marries a man for money. Impatient at his good health delaying her expected inheritance, she falsely complains to a friend about her husband's mental and physical abuse. Based on her lies, the friend kills her husband, thinking that he is saving her. Eventually, the scheme is discovered and they both go to prison. Two, a woman had been asked to meet with the principal of her son's school. The boy was caught on a surveillance camera stealing items from a locker. Despite the video and supporting evidence, the mom insists her son could never do that. After considerable time and effort, she is eventually forced to deal with the truth. The first lesson is that a person who, through lies and persuasion, manipulates others to commit crimes is also guilty of crimes. The second is that we humans all suffer from something called confirmation bias. When we have a firmly held belief, we are naturally and powerfully inclined to deny any evidence which contradicts those beliefs. As the January 6th hearings continue, it has become clear that our former president and many of his top supporters planned and orchestrated crimes against America. And as difficult as it may be for his followers, the evidence of these crimes is stark and overwhelming. Witnesses, emails, audio, video, and documentation. It is time to acknowledge and overcome our bias and fairly examine the evidence and demand justice. Blind faith has no vision. Again, that is a letter from William Green of North Liberty. There is a guest column from Bruce Lear, he's from Sioux City and has worked in public schools for 38 years. The title is No Need for Gun Amendment. I love the movie Tombstone. It was released in 1993, but it's still a good watch, even for the fifth time. It's also relevant now since the Supreme Court's recent expansion of gun rights and because Iowans in November will be asked to enshrine guns into the Iowa Constitution. There's a scene in the movie where the Earp brothers post a sign requiring guns be surrendered before entering town. One cowboy won't comply, and Virgil clubs him with the butt of his gun and takes the firearm from a bleeding, unconscious cowboy. In 1881, even though Tombstone was part of a somewhat lawless West, the Earp brothers understood something the majority justices of 2022 don't. They understood that adding unlimited guns to a crowded, volatile town would make it even wilder and more dangerous. That's what could happen to New York City now because of the court's ruling saying there needs to be no compelling reason for carrying a firearm. Let's clear something up. No one is coming to take guns away. I know people hear the threats that someone will take guns every time there is a mass shooting. But it's a grift, so people give to gun groups and buy more guns. And that does it for today's reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Wednesday, July 6, 2022. I'm your reader, Janet Griffith. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thanks for listening.